Thank you for tuning in to another episode of an Open Water Swimmers podcast. You may or may not know that I am endeavouring on my own set of ultramarathon swims this year and next. Clearly, compared to some of my incredible guests over these seasons, these events are relatively piddly. But nonetheless, I'm booked to swim the 65 kilometres around Jersey in September of 2023, and then I have my own English Channel solo attempt in August of 2024. I'm raising money for a charity called Amaze, who help families who have children with disabilities. They're based in Sussex. So if you're enjoying this podcast, please do head to my Just Giving page, which you can find on the blurb of the pod, or also if you go to my Instagram handle, OWSwimPod, it's there for you to find. Please donate anything at all. All donations are welcome, no matter how big or small. You can think of it, if you like, as just buying me a coffee. If you want to hear more about my story and why I am raising money for Amaze, then check out Intrepid Water and fellow swim podcaster Shannon Keegan and her interview with me back in May of 2022. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
I'm Jessica Hepburn, and you are listening to an Open Water Swimmers podcast.
It's episode 5 of season 3 of an Open Water Swimmers podcast with me, Will Ellis. Thank you for being here. Obviously, again, just remember to leave me a rating wherever you get your podcasts from. And please keep following the social media handles on Instagram and Twitter, which are both at OWSwimPod, where you can keep abreast of all the latest news regarding the podcast. So, on to today. I really enjoyed this chat that I'm sharing with you. I don't really know what to say without giving away too many spoilers, because it was just so awesome to be able to chat to her. But she is a channel swimmer and very successful writer, and she has so much to say that resonated with me enormously on such a personal level. A really inspiring episode, which I hope you will enjoy and agree with me on. It's my pleasure to have on the podcast Jessica Hepburn. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome to the podcast Jessica Hepburn. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your morning to chat to me today.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here, Will. Got a cup of tea and I'm ready for your 6 questions.
Oh, good. Oh, good. I'm glad you've done the background research on the podcast. Good.
Well, not much, but it's, yeah, right. I know you're going to ask me 6 questions. I don't know what they are, so I'm excited to know what they are.
Good. Well, 6 broad questions, and we may digress. Who knows? So I'll just open up first of all. Jess, why do you swim? Obviously, not everyone starts in the open water. So it might be, why did you take up swimming? Why do you continue to swim? And what is it about the water and the open water that keeps you coming back?
That is a lot of questions in one. And that is a very big question that needs a little bit of unpicking, it feels. Because I do not consider myself to be a swimmer. I mean, like, I swam as a child, but I didn't swim as a child, if that makes sense, in mm-hmm. that, like, I could swim and I enjoyed the water, but I would never get into the school swimming team, like, let alone get to that, you know, that level. You know, I read a lot of swimming books when I was little, you know, about those, you know, those kids that were like training for the county or the country and swimming in their local pool early morning. You know, like, I was never that child. I was a member of a swimming club at the Prince of Wales in Kentish Town, where like everyone used to joke that my best stroke was breaststroke legs. So which is a very good stroke, frankly. Yeah. So like, I could swim, but I'm not a swimmer, which is when we sort of move on to talking about like what then happened in my 40s, is important, because I basically, to cut a very long story short, I went through a very traumatic time in my 30s. Trying to have a family. My partner and I were diagnosed with infertility. We went through a total of 11 rounds of unsuccessful IVF. multiple miscarriages. I realize this is like, you know, deep, hard stuff to get into question one, and we may go into the detail of that. And I know you have your own fertility story, Will, but I basically, after our 11th round of unsuccessful IVF, I thought, I've got to do something different with my life. You know, what am I going to do? And so I decided I was going to swim the channel, the English Channel, the 21 miles from England to France. And I mean, like, it's nuts because, yeah, exactly. Because as I've just explained, I wasn't a swimmer. I definitely wasn't an open water swimmer. I mean, like, open water swimming has exploded in the last few years. And now lots of people are swimmers, but this is like 10 years ago now. And, you know, like, I had no idea what was involved in swimming the channel. And I sort of do describe it as a sort of part childhood dream, part midlife crisis, because I do think that as a child, and I know you're reading my book, 21 Miles, at the moment, Will, and there's this sort of moment at the beginning of that where I say that I didn't get into the school swimming team again, and I was consoling my dad. Like, I said, don't worry, Dad, you know, like, because one day I'm going to swim the English Channel. Like, and I just, so that was in my head as a child, but like, literally, I had not thought about it for 30 years. And I just thought, right, I'm going to do this. And I just then set out on this journey to swim the English Channel. And so I guess I am a swimmer now.
Like, of course you are.
Yeah, because I swam the English Channel. But I still don't consider myself a swimmer. And I suppose this is the sort of final part to your very long question that, like, stuck as well. You know, like, I swam the channel in 2015. And I still don't consider myself a swimmer, but I have now a deep and profound relationship with the water that is just, well, it changed my life, and it's a relationship that I know that I will have for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Well, that's a lovely answer to a very long question. And I apologize for that when I said I had six questions and there's about four packed into the first one, granted. So let's just track back a little bit. Obviously, there's lots in there, which I'm sure we'll talk about in due course. But what was it then about the water that made you think, right, I'm going to do a challenge that is associated with the water, as opposed to, say, the London Marathon or climbing Mount Everest, which I know is on your
agenda.
Another challenge that's on your agenda. What was it about the water?
Well, it's off my agenda now because I've just done it. But yeah.
Have you? I didn't know. Oh, congratulations.
Well, yeah, but that's not the subject of this podcast. But yeah. I mean, it's that was an even longer journey to swimming the channel. But that's when you do your mountain podcast. Yeah.
Oh my word. That's incredible. So are you the first woman to have swam the channel and climbed Everest?
Well, I am the second woman to have ever swum the channel and climbed Everest, but I am the first woman to have ever done what is called the Sea Street Summit Challenge, which is to swim the channel, run a marathon, a road marathon, the London Marathon, because I did go on to do that next and then climb Everest, yeah.
Gosh, that is incredible. God, how inspirational.
But let's go back to the water.
Yeah, so much. My head is fizzing. Absolutely, yeah, fizzing now. That's totally new information to me. My head is buzzing to ask you so many questions, and I have to just chart back and see if I can get these sort of in order in my head. So, yeah. Okay, let's go back. So, what was it about the water then that on your first challenge that said that's what I'm going to do first? And obviously, you are one of the most tenacious people I think I've ever come across in terms of, first and foremost, 11 rounds of IVF. I mean, that is incredible, and I admire and applaud your tenacity in that. So I guess then, what was it about the water and the channel that decided you just went, well, I can do this next? Do you know what I mean? Is there?
Well, I mean, like, I can only sort of refer back in a way to what I was saying about, like, that it was a sort of a childhood idea. That, you know, like, I know I've just sort of stunned you a bit with this Everest thing, like, but I cannot say strongly enough, I am not an athlete. You know, like I am the, well, you know, Will, because when you approached me about being on this podcast, even though we haven't spoken for a very long time, that our paths first crossed because of the theatre. Yeah. And I like, you know, if kids are divided into arty and sporty people, which I think they are, I'm like I was the arty one, not the sporty one. Like I didn't, I hate exercise. I still hate exercise. I all forms of exercise. Like there's nothing about any of this stuff that I've done that has been easy for me or indeed pleasurable for me. I mean, there is some pleasure in it, which we might describe, but I don't find it pleasurable per se. I find it incredibly painful, but actually these challenges have come out of a lot of pain. And they have transformed that pain into like many positive things for me. So I like, why the channel and not the marathon or Everest, which I went on to do, or any other form of thing, I can only say because I did enjoy swimming as a child. Mm. I've always liked swimming, but I'm not, but like as much as I like any form of exercise, you know, I'd never done more than a few laps in the pool or, so there's no like, and I knew nothing. I had no idea what was involved. Like that there is no like comprehensive answer to that other than that I need to do something different with my life. I need to do something big. Okay. I'm going to swim the channel. Mm. Right now. How do I do that? then it started to unfold and I was totally terrified. But once I thought it, I couldn't unthink it, right? Mm. And what was also totally terrifying is that obviously I had no idea how many parallels there were going to be with going through IVF. Just in simple terms, you know, like I always say, nature decides whether you can conceive and carry a baby, and nature decides whether you can cross a sea and or indeed climb a mountain. And when I discovered, and you know, if nature decides you're not going to conceive and carry a baby or cross a sea or climb a mountain, you're not going to do it. And when I realized those parallels, that was even more terrifying because I thought, oh my God, I might fail at something again. And I was doing this thing because of like everything that I've been through and I wanted to do something positive. Mm. So that was the journey I needed to go on. There were lessons to be learned. And so I do think that that's what's so significant for me.
Yeah. That's really interesting that you've drawn that parallel. Obviously, my different experience with IVF for all sorts of reasons, you know, being a man primarily. I always look at swimming for me as a form of control in a life that is out of control. You know, I'm a freelancer. I struggle to have children, but swimming was always there for me as a form of control. And you've just painted a wonderful picture, I guess, of the events that lead us to, you know, that swimming might lead us towards, which, as you say, nature decides whether we can or can't do. But do you identify with that idea of control? And you said that you wanted to do something different away from the IVF. That is there an element of trying to control something out of a place where you couldn't control something else?
That's so fascinating that you said that. Like, I don't know whether it had anything to do with control in the first place, but what I can tell you fundamentally is that this journey has been so important for me about accepting that I don't have control. Mm-hmm. My relationship with the water, and specifically the sea, mm-hmm. is about accepting my lack of control, that something bigger than me is in charge of me and all of us. Mm. And coming to terms with that and, you know, my insignificance in the universe and how it doesn't matter if you can't control everything is what's been my journey. But like, we all need to go on different journeys, right? So you needed something different. So I totally get and respect that your journey with the water and swimming has been about the need for control. But for mine, it's about surrendering control.
There's an interesting idea in that. I think that it's, some people are product driven and some people are process driven. In my head, and I have a couple of big swims planned over the next couple of years. If I've done the preparation, then actually not completing the event won't matter, because it won't be through any lack of my own preparation. Obviously, you can't relate that to something like IVF, but the control that one puts in place to swim, say the channel, and in your case, for me, the process outweighs the end product. I don't feel like that's the same way for you in terms of swimming the channel. Like the actual event of swimming the channel was everything, and the process leading up to it was.
Yeah, I mean, one of the sort of like big themes of thought in my life is around this difference between journey and destination, which is similar to what you're saying. And I think what is really interesting and true is, for me, is that there was this point of realization, which was after I set this dream of swimming the channel, where I realized that however much I trained, like I went from being like breaststroke legs, head up breaststroke. I couldn't even do the crawl, like, to doing everything that was required to swim the English Channel, which is a lot if you're going from nothing, which I essentially was. But then I also had this point when it happened to me when I did a relay of the channel with two other people, and we didn't get across because the weather turned. And there happened to me at this point was when I had this full realization that however much I prepared, however much I was ready, my ability to get across was out of my control.
Yeah.
That was terrifying for me. I mean, what's really interesting, and this is why these sort of conversations are so brilliant, right? Because we're all different, and we're all a product of our like mad lives that have brought us to where we are in this moment. And of course, it's always changing. Our philosophies are always changing. But like what you've needed to do, what you need the water for, is different from me. And I totally can see that if you're saying that if I've done all the prep, then it doesn't sort of really matter if I achieve these big swims, because I've done all the preparation, and the preparation is what's important. Whereas for me, when I realized that I'd done all the prep, but actually I might not really reach the destination, which was France, again, and the destination of the 11 rounds of IVF was a baby, and I hadn't reached that either. When I realized that I might not reach it again, like, that was terrifying to me. Like the thought of two failures, but that was what I needed to learn. You know, that is what the water was needed, that was there to teach me. Or that's what I feel. But the water's there to teach you something different. And I mean, like, I don't know, you know, we're not going to be able to talk long enough to explore that. And you're primarily interviewing me. But like, I suspect that the water's, and I have this funny thing that I say to people, like, because, you know, like, the, open water swimming, wild swimming has exploded, you know, in the last 10 years. And I see all these people, like I was the only person who wore a dry robe when I was in London, as far as I'm concerned. But like, seriously, I discovered this thing called the dry robe, right? And I did a lot of my training in London at the Serpentine. No one at the Serpentine wore a dry robe. I mean, they're all like really hard. I mean, they might now, but in like back when I was training for the Channel, they didn't wear dry robes. Channel swimmers didn't wear dry robes. Now everyone wears a dry robe. And I would walk around. I love my dry robe so much. And I'd take it on the tube and people would look at me like I was the Grim Reaper, you know. And I loved it so much. But now, you know, like open water swimming has exploded and everyone's, you know, wearing a dry robe. But I look at all the people swimming, like I would like one, because I swim, like I try and swim once a week and it might only be for 5 minutes. And for me, it's about keeping that connection with the water. And we might talk a little bit more about that. But I'm always quite surprised when I see everyone else swimming and loving it for all the different reasons that they do. Because I just think, yeah, but the water's, it's just me and the water. Like, it's just me and her, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you all do? I mean, like, what are you all doing here in your dry robes? Because it's such an intimate relationship now, me and the water. But, like, you know, I just laugh about that because, of course, we all have our relationship with the water and it looks different. And the reasons why it's so transformational is different for everyone. And I totally respect that. But, like, these are the particular ingredients of my relationship. And we're married. Like, I'm married to her. I'm married to the sea. Yeah,
that's lovely. What a beautiful answer. So now you've illustrated so beautifully the beginnings of your relationship with the water and what it meant to you then, sort of what it means to you now, which actually is a later question. But what was the difference then in completing the Channel, which was obviously a water-based challenge, to then, you know, completing Everest or completing the London Marathon? Was there a difference? Did it resonate with you differently? Obviously, all three together are insane. I mean, I'm in awe of you. But was there? Is there a marked difference between the water-based challenge compared to the other two?
Well, there's a marked, for me, there is a marked difference between the water and the mountain-based challenge to the street challenge, the land challenge, because the thing about the marathon, which is really tough, no question, and a different thing again, but basically you can do a marathon in any scenario, like as long as your body, you know, will do it, you can start at Greenwich and run the 26.2 miles to the mile, and unless you decide to stop or your body packs in and you stop, you know, like nothing's going to stop you, you know. Whereas with the sea and the mountains, whether you achieve that challenge, whether you swim from England to France or whether you climb from base camp to the top of the world, like nature decides. It doesn't matter how much you've trained, doesn't matter how much you want it, doesn't matter how strong you are, like, or you, something bigger than you decides on whether you will achieve that challenge. And that's why those two are fundamentally different from the marathon.
That's entirely how I would picture it in my head. I mean, the idea of surrender, which I've talked about on previous podcasts, you know, when you are surrendering to the elements in the open water. But I always feel like the preparation for me is 95% of the work, and that's what I enjoy the most, so much so that on event day, if I complete a challenge, it almost doesn't feel like I had imagined it would feel completing something, because the work was in a sense was the challenge. But that idea of surrendering to nature when anything can go wrong, when anything can decide whether you complete something, I think is wonderful and certainly has parallels to all sorts of life experiences.
Definitely. And I do think there can, I mean, like, the thing is, I mentioned earlier about like journeys and destinations are really important to me, because like it took me 3 attempts to get to, like, I in the end with the Channel, it was perfect. And you know, I'm a perfectionist. I do like perfection. And I did get across, you know, like, on the first attempt, With Everest, it took 3 attempts, one of which was a non-attempt because the mountain was closed. I was supposed to go in 2020, and 2 weeks before I was due to fly out to Nepal, the mountain was closed. And so I didn't go at all in 2020. And then I did go in 2021 and I wasn't able to summit. And then I went again this year in 2022 and I did, or last year. And like lots of people said to me, oh, it's about the journey. It doesn't, you know, and I did have to do a lot of soul searching about whether I, you know, I should go back, or like whether the mountain had decided, like, you know, like, Jessica, you don't like, it was 1-0 to nature. When I made this connection between trying to have a baby and the channel, it felt like, and that nature was in sort of control. It felt like it was a battle. Right. I was for a while. So I felt like I was 1-0 down to nature. So nature had, she'd not given me a baby. And now we were on this journey to swim the channel. And then she allowed me. I mean, I recognize she's also omnipotent, but it sort of became a sort of game. Right. So then she allowed me to get across the channel. So we were 1-1. Right. And then it felt like the journey to Everest then became this thing, which is that I wanted to end 2-1 up.
Right.
And when I wasn't able to summit in 2020 due to COVID, and then 21 I did go and I wasn't able to summit, I did have this big question after that, whether I should go back, whether what I needed to learn was that if you try and make this a battle with nature, she's got to win, right? Because she is nature. And so what you're trying to do, so at that point to me, she was sort of 2-1 up, right? She'd got the, hadn't given me a baby, hadn't given me Everest, but had given me the chance. Like, I mean, like this, I sound like I'm a bit nuts, right?
No, I completely opposite. I think you sound completely sane.
You're being very, very kind.
No, I do. I think that's a very rational response to surrendering to the world.
You know? It's a way of controlling
the uncontrollable in a way.
Yeah. So it was sort of like, I think what I'm saying is that one of the things that I'm saying anyway is that I really admire your approach to, it's all about the journey, it's about the training, whether I achieve the destination is sort of immaterial, but because the destination or the goals had become really important to me because, you know, like, and I'm sure you, I mean, it does sound like you're understanding what I'm saying, even though I feel like I'm sounding like I'm totally nuts and crazy. But like, you know, when you go through these big fertility journeys, as we've both done, it feels so unfair, you know, like this is what animals can do. They can have children easily, right? That we're born to reproduce, and like when we're growing up, we're told that like there are many things in life we might not get, but we're not told that having a child is going to be one of the things that's going to be difficult. And then suddenly it's difficult, and that's really, really hard, and feels really unfair, and has so many complex and difficult emotions around it. Mm-hmm. And so then I sort of, you know, I needed this destination of the channel to feel like nature was on my side. She wasn't just against me, you know, like she hadn't just put me through 11 rounds of IVF and not given me what I wanted, and then wasn't going to give me the channel either, when I realized that actually she was in charge of that one as well, you know, which was devastating to me because I was on this journey and I couldn't turn back at that point when I realized this. And then she did give me the channel, and then I went on the journey for Everest. Well, first the marathon and then to Everest. And then I realized it was the same about mountains. And I didn't know anything about the sea and mountains. I mean, and now I have this intimate relationship with them and I understand them profoundly and have this respect for them profoundly. And when I didn't get to the top of Everest those two times, like I thought, like, well, this is maybe the lesson that I've got to learn here. Is that like, if this is a battle, she's always got to win. She's gonna have to win. Yeah, you've got to surrender to that, Jessica. She, you know, like that's what I felt that my learning needed to be. I did go back. I felt that there were some areas that I could, talking about your preparation, that I could improve, and I went back. And this year, I did get to the top, and I feel so grateful for that. And you know, like I do feel, and again, like I do feel like I do sound a bit mad, but I don't care, because like this is like, it's all, we've got to make sense of our traumas, right? And mm-hmm. and not being able to have a child is my trauma, right? And I now feel like, for me, you know, and I can feel myself get emotional saying it, like that nature does love me, you know. Yeah. She let me have, and I really had to work so hard at swimming the channel and climbing Everest, because I'm not an athlete. I'm not a sporty person. There's nothing that I enjoy about it. I find it really, it's like self-harm to me, you know, like, but I needed to go on this journey, and I needed the destination. Mm. And it was possible that the destination wasn't the top of the world or France. I realized that, but in actual fact it was, and that has given me an immense amount of peace. Mm. And I needed that.
Yeah, that's an amazing response, and I thank you for being so honest and being so kind to yourself in the way that you've reconciled that. I think is amazing. And to have achieved those things for anyone is individually are astonishing. And the way you have reconciled with nature in that way, to have a relationship with someone, her, that has caused so much pain, is an amazing response. You've sort of stared her in the face.
Yeah, way, yeah,
and not been angry or mad, but almost shook her hand. If in my
yeah, head. yeah. I'm her child in a way. Mm. I mean, you know, like I don't call her like Everest is Everest, because you know, the most famous mountain in the world, everyone knows Everest, named after a man who never even saw her. I mean, I call her Chomalungma, which is her Tibetan name, which means mother goddess of the world. Wow. And she is my mother, you know, my mother, as is the sea, you know. Yeah.
Do you look at the sea, just on that, do you look at the sea as a whole, or do you look at that stretch of water? Is there a specific, a bit like Everest, do you look at the mountains now and think of Everest? Do you look at the sea and think of the channel? Is there a specific relationship that you have with those two stretches that surmounts, you know, anywhere else?
That's a really interesting question that I haven't thought about deeply, but I think of the sea and I think of the mountains, but I have a specific relationship with Chomalungma and the channel. Mm. Yeah. It was all about that stretch of water and that mountain, but there were many seas on the journey and many mountains on the journey to those singular bodies of water or mountains. And I do think about that, all the seas and all the mountains in the world being sort of connected to them. Mm. But it's very specifically about those two things. Yeah.
In your book, there's a lovely moment when you're dropped out at sea off Formentera in your sort of first open water swim camp, and you talk beautifully about suddenly you're in the deep water and it feels very unfamiliar compared to swimming along the shoreline of Formentera. And I relate to that, having grown up in Ibiza and spent a lot of time in that part of the world. It's suddenly like, oh, hang on, where am I? So I think
I love that, actually. Like, I love, you know, like, I wasn't a swimmer. and I'd never really open water swam before, but like I remember so distinctly that feeling of being dropped in the middle of the ocean and then being on my own, because you know, the boat then drove off to look after the other swimmers or whatever. And I didn't feel scared. I felt sort of cradled. Like, and I know that other people would feel very, I never feel scared in the water. Yeah.
So that's an interesting one, because that's another question a bit later, and which we'll chart back to. But so what are your earliest memories of then swimming in the open water? Is it that, you know, that time in Formentera perhaps, or is there a sort of moment you can chart back?
So in open water, well, I grew up on the edge of Hampstead Heath, and I live here again. I've moved back to my childhood home, so I always had a relationship with the ponds, the Hampstead ponds. I sort of like open water was always sort of familiar to me in that sense. I never really had a particular relationship with the sea, you know, like Formentera, you know, that was the first time that I had ever sort of swum in cold water. And I remember, you know, for any length of time, and the length of time was 10 minutes. And I still say that like 10 minutes in water feels like 10 hours, you know, like it really does. Yeah. People that like don't understand this, but I still get terrified of the water, you know, like, I mean, I love her and I've talked at length about this relationship I have with her, but like, I am terrified of getting in the water now, even for 5 minutes, I get scared.
Yeah. So you terrified about getting in, because then you mentioned earlier that a few minutes ago that you felt cradled in the open water at Formentera. So are you terrified, because I'm terrified about getting in, but once I'm in, I'm fine.
Look, I'm not. I think that what I feel is that when I'm in the water, it and it's deep and dark in the middle of the sea, I don't feel like, you know, I know lots of people feel like what's underneath me, or like out of, you know, like out of their depths or control. Like, I don't feel that, but it's the cold that I am like, the thought of going to get into the ladies' pond or the mixed pond or the Lido at the moment, which I did this week, and swimming two lengths, the sort of like the thought of that cold hitting you, like that always fills me with a sort of fear and dread, and then you do it and you've done it and you know you feel good, of course, but like that you've done it. But yeah, so they're sort of slightly separate things, but that's what's so brilliant about the water. There's so many different elements to it, aren't there?
So how has that then changed from a child in the ponds? Did you have that same reticence about getting in? And then has that then changed to your experience of open water now?
You know, it's like the ponds are sort of so changed, you know, from when I was a child. Like, I'm 52 now. Like, as a child, we would only go to the ponds in the summer, you know, like, and it was always hard getting into the cold. But like in the summer, it's different from swimming year round. You know, like I only swam year round for the first time when I started training for the channel, you know, like part of my, and I wrote about this in my book, that there is no, like what I discovered, I mean, I'm sure this will change, and it's sort of, if it hasn't already, there was, when I was swimming the channel, there was no manual to swimming the channel. It's not like running a marathon where there are millions of, you know, like, you know, programs that you can do. There wasn't really a manual. So I sort of made up my manual for swimming the channel based on all the information that I got. And one of them was that I would swim year round. And, you know, any marathon, cold water marathon swimmer will tell you that swimming, like for getting into the cold water in December for 5 minutes, is not training for the channel. Like, that, you know, like, but for me, like, it was really, really important, because I needed to face down that fear of the cold. And that is one that, but I don't remember that being a big thing from my childhood about swimming in the ponds, because we only swam in the ponds in the summer, you know. And there is a big diff, like, I mean, I'm still terrified getting into the ponds in the summer now because I'm a wuss. But like, you know, there is the, one of the things you learn is there's like a massive difference between 1 degree. You know, I sort of like go along to the ponds now and go, what's the damage? I say to the lifeguards, what's the damage? And they go, oh, it's like 11 degrees. Or it's like 9 degrees. Like, that's a massive difference. Mm-hmm. That's a massive difference. Every degree is worth so much when it comes to water, you know. Yeah. And I know that now. But yeah. I sort of love knowing that as well. I love that's, you know, like there's so many different elements to your relationship with swimming or the water. And I just love that I know that. I love that I know that the difference between a degree is big.
Yeah,
just like adds a lot to my life, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's too cold for me. A lot of why I am swimming bigger challenges now is because of the podcast. I was speaking to Sarah Thomas, I was speaking to Jamie Monahan, I was speaking to, you know, people of all different abilities, ages, etc., all of whom are, you know, embodying cold water, and I hate the cold, and that's why part of the reason I'm sort of doing it is to slowly face the cold. But I'm not going to get in the cold until April. We have Pell's pool here, which if we have a warm April, the end of April, I can get in and it'll be 15, and that's okay. And that's when I'm going to acclimatize, because I have no interest in 9 to 11 degrees. You know, that's just, for me, that's just purgatory. And there's no value for me in terms of, as you correctly say, in terms of like any sort of aerobic capacity with that. It's just about acclimatization.
Yeah. And I first of all, you were clearly a swimmer as a child. Like you and I are completely different. I mean, you're clearly a really good swimmer. And you're absolutely right about training. I mean, the only thing that I would say that the little thing that I've learned, and I totally agree that for you, you know, why would you swim year round? And you're slim. I can see that you're slim, you know, and so the cold is going to be a big, you know, a big issue for you. But the only thing that I would say that I have learned is that it's always good in training for whatever challenge you're taking on to face the thing that you most fear. And, you know, like for me, like, and this is one of the reasons why I went back to Everest, right? Is that like, I have a superpower, and my superpower is my mental strength. I mean, and you know, as someone who's been through IVF, and you've said like about the 11 rounds of IVF, you don't go like 11 rounds of IVF, you've got to be mentally tough to go through that. Yeah. And so I sort of relied on my mental strength with the channel and with Everest. Like, well, I can beat any, like, I might not be the fittest or the fastest here, but I can beat anyone hands down on mental endurance. And of course, these big endurance challenges, and you will know this in training for Jersey and training for the channel, like, involve mental and physical endurance. It's, you know, some people will say it's 80-20, it's 80 mental and 20 physical. I don't agree with that. I think it's 50-50. And I think what you have to do is you have to work out which is your weak bit, and you have to work on the weak bit. Because, like, you know, for me, the mental endurance is easy. And so the thing that I learn when I came back from Everest, having not got to the top, is that I have to work on the thing that I'm weakest at and the thing that I hate, and stop relying on the thing that I'm really good at, which is mental endurance. And for me with Everest, it was speed. I wasn't fast enough. Well, that's not the problem you have in the water, right? So, I mean, speed is my problem in the water as well, but I also have this big fear of the cold, you know, like it, and I still have that. And that's why sort of swimming year round really helped me. Mm. Because I know that if I can get up on a January day and get into sub 5 degree, that's what leading up to my channel swim, that I can get into sub 5. And I can swim, even if it's just for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And if I know that I can do that, and that is my nemesis, that gives me strength for swimming 18 hours across the channel. And it did. It did. Mm. I believe. And I don't know what, like, I do agree with you that you don't need, that isn't, maybe you don't need to do that. But what I would say, from my limited experience of taking on these challenges now, I'm laughing because I am not an athlete and you are clearly, but like work out what it is that you are, that is your nemesis.
Yeah, that's incredibly sage advice. And I you know, I'm a swimmer, but I haven't come close to anything you've achieved in terms of the water. Certainly, just because I'm a swimmer doesn't give me any more value in swimming the channel than anyone else, because ultimately you've either swum it or you haven't. But in my head, I've reconciled the training as 90% of the journey. That's just my personal take on it. But actually, when it comes down to it, if she doesn't let me across, as we've correctly said, ultimately I will never have swum the channel. So it's kind of irrelevant. Mental, in my head, mental tenacity far outweighs the physical aspects, and that's something I need to work at, and especially with the cold, because I'm not great in anything, in anything under 15 degrees, certainly for any severe length of time. And I think that's very sage advice for anyone in attempting any sort of challenges. Work out what you're weakest at. So anyway.
And I think also for you with the channel, it's interesting that you say it's about the journey, it's about the preparation that's important.
That also is a self-protection mechanism for me.
Yeah. And so I would say that's the thing that you need to explore, because that may stop you from getting across. It may. Mm. And I talk about this a bit, this guy, Nick from the Serpentine, who swam the channel many, many times. He said to me, Jessica, you've got to work out why you're doing this, why you want this, because it's going to get tough out there. And you've got to have that really clear in your head. And I would say to you, it's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure that the preparation thing is your sort of protection. And you will want to get across. You will.
Yeah.
So you've got to work out how you can build the strength around that bit, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also only ever call it an attempt. When people say, you're swimming the channel, I say, yeah, I'm going to attempt to swim the channel.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Because, there are never any guarantees in anything. And like, for me, the control in my life is the preparation, as we've talked about, and that's my way of dealing with grief, IVF, all the stuff that happens in life, is a way of sort of helping to temper that slightly. So open water swimming has always had a degree of fear factor for me, which I think is potentially why it's so addictive for some people, certainly. Do you identify, I think we've sort of covered this a little bit earlier, but do you identify with that idea of it being terrifying? And in that, do you find it somehow even more of a pull?
Yeah, I definitely identify as terrifying, and yes, I'm sure that makes it a pull.
I mean, this is one of my base questions, and you've answered this question in so many other ways earlier, but it's one of my base questions. I sort of have to ask, because
I
understand that open water swimming is fearful, but life has thrown you many things to be more fearful of than swimming.
Yeah, I mean, again, I refer to as part of this the book that you're reading, 21 Mars, which is my second book. I basically approached 21 famous inspirational women and asked for them to meet and eat with me and help me get fat to swim the channel. And because there is a sort of because you can't wear a wetsuit if you want to be an official channel swimmer, and human padding is the only way that keeps out the cold. But actually, there's a big theory of thought now that you don't want to put on too much weight, but because you're because that affects your speed and your, in the water. But obviously you're doing so much training, it is a license to eat, which is one of the great redeeming things about it. And eating is my religion. And one of the conversations I had with Professor Susan Green field, his amazing scientist, was she said, and it really has stuck with me, doing something hard and achieving it, that's what happiness is. And I, you know, I that really resonates with me. And doing something hard, the channel, and achieving it, getting to France, that is that made me very happy. Mm. So it was worth facing the terror and the hardness for that happiness.
Yeah. God, what a lovely answer. What a beautiful response to that question. It's always quite a woolly question, that. And to an extent, people already answered it in what we'd already talked about. So it always can be a bit woolly, but that's a really kind of beautiful, kind of pertinent response. So someone once said to me, always remember that the water wants you, which I've always found useful in many respects, either when I'm in the middle of a long swim or if I don't want to swim. Do you identify with that?
Always remember that the water wants you.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've never heard that. I mean, and what I'm immediately struck by is that the phrases that we hear, like I've just given you one that someone said to me that stuck with me, and this is one that stuck with you. And do I think of the water wanting me?
Well, you mentioned being cradled earlier in Formentera.
Yeah. I don't like. Is it okay to say that, like, the water wanting me is not something that resonates with me? What I'm interested in is, why does it not resonate with me? Because I want her, you know, like I want her more than she wants me.
But that, all those moments swimming as a child, even with breaststroke legs, and saying to your dad, "I'm gonna swim the channel one day." She was calling to you then.
Yeah, maybe. And obviously I am, what's the word? I'm anthropizing her, you know, like making her into a human being. I want her more than she wants me. Definitely. That resonates with me more. But she loves me. Mm. Yeah. I do feel that she loves me always. So perhaps what would resonate with me more, I mean, we're going into such poetic territory, aren't we? But that's what's fun. It's fun. Mm. But like, if you'd said to me, always remember that the water loves you, that would resonate more with me than always remember that she wants you.
What a great answer.
Yeah, she loves me. She loves me. And I do want her, and she loves me.
But do you love her? Yeah, that's great. But do you love her back?
I love her, but I also hate her.
That's the perfect relationship.
I love and I hate. It's like the great Catullus poem. Do you know the Latin poet Catullus, the Roman poet? Odia amo, I love and I hate. Why do I do it? Perhaps you ask. I do not know, but I am tortured by it. And that is... that is it. Yeah, that's my life, basically, right there. You'll find that quote in my book too.
I think that's the best response I've ever had. How amazing. So that rather beautifully leads me to my final question, which was quite simply, where was your last swim and how was it?
Oh, my last swim was at the Parliament Hill Lido on Monday morning. I had what I describe in life as a punctuation on Sunday. And a punctuation is when I have too much to drink, but I love it. I had a very nice Sunday lunch with a lot of wine. And what I've discovered in life is that the single best way of getting over waking up with a bit of a thick head is swimming in cold water. So I got up very early and I swam in the Parliament Hill Lido. And it was bloody cold.
I bet it was.
And actually, do you know what? I realized when I got there that I hadn't brought my hat, right? And the thing is, you get into this thing, right? Like I'm not a great planner, but I have become obsessed with sort of water and clothing etiquette in relation to water. So like now getting into cold water and not having a hat on, you know, or getting out of cold water and not putting the right clothes on is just an anathema to me. And like when I see people do it, you know, I get a bit sort of like, you know, evangelical about how you need to respect the water and what you need to do with. And so like I was like, oh my God, I haven't got my hat. And so then I sort of like going to the Lido, have you got a hat? And there were all these people swimming up and down the Lido because everybody swims these days without a hat. But I was like, no. And all I was planning to do was two lengths of the Lido, right? It's not a lot. I just was trying to get rid of my hangover. But anyway, the lifeguard didn't have a hat. So I had to get into the Lido and swim up and down with no hat. But it was okay. I survived.
You survived.
And then I did got rid of the hangover. So yeah.
Hangover evaporated. That's beautiful. Oh, that's beautiful. I can't thank you enough, Jess. What a wonderful chat. Before I stop recording, I have to just say that there's a wonderful group of swimmers down here called the Seabirds. And they...
Where do you live, Will?
We're in Brighton.
Oh, right, yeah.
And the Seabirds, who was set up by a lady called Kath, who I interviewed on the podcast in season one. And she and five of her friends from the Seabirds, they did a channel relay this year. And as part of their process, they read your book, 21 Miles. Oh. And two of them have now booked to do a solo as a result. So you are, I think they would appreciate the shout out. And
that just means the world to me. And, you know, if I have one thing that I'm trying to do in the world, which is encourage people to go on adventures, and they can look like all sorts of different things. And, you know, like, and definitely if the adventure what you want to go on is to do with open water swimming or swimming the channel, then if I can, you can.
Oh, bless you. Well, that was an amazing chat. And thank you for being so candid and open and honest. It was a real pleasure to speak to you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jessica, for that chat. It was so lovely to be able to talk with you so openly and with someone who has been through so much and has quite literally swam through it. Your tenacity is extraordinary, and I really hope our paths cross again and we stay in touch. So thank you again. I'll be back next week. And until then, happy swimming, one and all.